Welcome back to a Metro News special report, Human Rights in China, A Closer Look. Here's Eric Olander.
In September, Chinese Foreign Minister Chen Qichen told the United Nations General Assembly some countries use the forum of human rights to wage a Cold War. Chen maintains human rights have been used by the industrialized world as a means of carrying out power politics in order to intervene in the internal affairs of other countries. And once again, the foreign minister also repeated Beijing's claim that there are in fact cultural differences in understanding the concept of human rights. Chen says, and I quote, "China believes in order to effectively safeguard and promote the realization of universal human rights, the world community has to respect different political, economic, and social systems, as well as the characteristics of countries with different religious, cultural, and historical backgrounds." Legislator Martin Li is unquestionably Hong Kong's most outspoken critic of Beijing's human rights policies. Li is also a leading executive of the Alliance in Support of Patriotic and Democratic Movements in China, an organization branded by the Chinese Communist Party as counter-revolutionary and subversive. Martin Li.
A basic human right knows of no cultural differences. It's the right that a man or woman is entitled to enjoy qua or as a human being. So I cannot understand why the Chinese are different. Why should the Chinese be different to the Mongolians, to the Indians, to the Africans, and to the whites? Unless we say we are less than a human being. And that is why I always feel offended when people say, all right, but, you know, the Chinese have never enjoyed democracy or human rights, whatever. As if because we are Chinese, we are different, and we can cope with less. I find this totally offensive.
Do you think there are differences between civil rights, economic rights, and political rights?
Oh, yes. But then when you look at the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, they put the two together. Of course, there is another International Covenant on Economic Rights. So these are rights which different countries, some are very well developed, some are underdeveloped, but they all agree that these are basic. In other words, these rights would simply reflect what is considered to be a very low water mark, the bottom line of these rights. And if the citizens of a particular country enjoys even less than those set out in the international covenants, then this is not the sort of thing that all the countries in the world would tolerate. These are the bottom line sort of rights, not the sort of rights that you would expect people in the well-developed countries to be content with. And China should not be different.
Which of the rights do you think the people in China are most deprived of, civil, political, or economic rights?
Well, it's very difficult to say which is most deprived of. When you look at people who are locked in prison because of their religious beliefs, particularly the Catholics, and because they consider that the true Catholic Church is the Vatican, and therefore they're imprisoned on all sorts of trumped up charges, or sometimes they're imprisoned even without a trial on any offense. And there are others who are deprived of a fair trial because of their political beliefs and they do not agree with the party. But basically, you can look at it differently, and that is anybody who believes or says or does anything which is not acceptable to the Chinese Communist Party leaders at that particular moment will be in trouble with the law. Very often when a person has some sort of international reputation, the chances are that he will be unlikely to be kept in prison without trial. But there is also always some sort of trial for some sort of offense, and then such a person is in prison for a long, long time. But then when a person who holds different beliefs, which is not tolerated by the party, is not well known at all, then one really doesn't know what happens to him or her, because nobody knows about such people.
Now, you have been quoted as saying, entrusting Hong Kong to China would be like handing over 5.5 million Jews to Germany after the Second World War. Can you expand on that?
I said it, of course, at the time of shortly after the Tiananmen Square massacre. Now it is said that the massacre did not actually take place inside Tiananmen Square, but just outside. To me, this doesn't make any difference. It happened in the capital of China, where Chinese troops were called upon to shoot and did shoot and kill their own people in their own capital. And that was also the time when the Chinese government actually published lists of people executed for having taken part in those, what we consider to be lawful demonstrations in Tiananmen Square. And at that point, therefore, a lot of people in Hong Kong thought that we could not simply be handed back to China with the land in 1997 without making sure that there are enough safeguards in terms of human rights in Hong Kong, and with a good system of law to enforce those rights, and also with a democratic foundation to make sure that the rule of law can continue after 1997. And at that time, therefore, I suggested a number of things for the British government to do. First, I said the people of Hong Kong would not like the People's Liberation Army to be stationed in Hong Kong, having seen what they did to their own people in their own capital. So perhaps they could negotiate with the Chinese. They ought to negotiate with the Chinese and do something about that in the Joint Declaration. Perhaps that clause should be rewritten. And I did say that, of course, the Joint Declaration is a binding document until it can be improved. And if China simply would not negotiate any further, then the Joint Declaration would continue to be a legally binding document. But if the Chinese leaders would take into account the strong wishes of the people of Hong Kong, and therefore would be agreeable to amending that clause in the Joint Declaration, then of course the people of Hong Kong would, I'm sure, be very happy. The next thing I asked for is there should be a Bill of Rights to guarantee that human rights would be respected after 1997, and we also need a democratic foundation to make sure that the executive would not be interfering with the judiciary, particularly when it comes to human rights cases. And so I asked for all these things to be done by the British government, and Sir Geoffrey Howe's answer was no to everything. He ultimately promised a Bill of Rights, but in the beginning he said no to everything. And it was in that context that I said, well, but if you then want to hand over the 5.5 million peace-loving people of Hong Kong to this repressive communist regime in 1997, then it's really like handing over 5.5 million peace-loving Jews to Nazi Germany.
How concerned do you think the people of Hong Kong are about human rights in China, especially in view of 1997?
When human rights are being deprived of our compatriots in China, it doesn't augur well for the respect of human rights in Hong Kong after 1997. Because I always say that if any person in any country in the world should find his human rights deprived and we do nothing, then the day may finally come when our own rights are deprived and nobody else will complain about it. I always believe that when you come to such basic matters as democracy and human rights, they really know of no national boundaries. Unless all the people in the world enjoy these basic standards of human rights, then nobody is safe from deprivation.
Now let's get to pre-1997. Does the human rights climate in China directly affect Hong Kong today?
Certainly not directly, but indirectly. And the people of Hong Kong have always been watching human rights violations in China. Because once they see those rights infringed today, they always believe that there is a distinct possibility that there will be similar infringements in Hong Kong after 1997.
Is that your concern of yours right now?
Oh, definitely.
Hong Kong legislator Martin Lee. The Chinese position has been that as a developing country with an annual population growth of 17 million people, Beijing's main human rights priority is to feed 22% of the world's population with only 7% of the globe's arable land. They add, by successfully caring for their population, they are respecting every Chinese national's basic human right of survival. But Li Chaqian, also of the alliance, says that isn't the case. Only a select few in China are privileged to have protection of their human rights.
I would say that there are only human rights for the party leaders, but not human rights in general for the people of China. And I think especially in places where it's more remote from the city, the human rights situation may be even worse. And I would say there are, in general, a lack of awareness of human rights in China on the part of the people of China. They think that they are denied of the right for so many years and they may not be aware that they have such rights. I think gradually when in the city, whereby there are more contacts with the outside world, the awareness of human rights had changed a lot already.
Do you think this lack of awareness exists also outside of China, that is, towards looking into China's human rights situation?
I think from the outside, it is very difficult for us to truly understand the abuses of human rights in China, because there are always a lack of information outflow. Say, for example, after June 4th, there are lots of people who are being jailed or executed. We don't even know the full list, and there are some missing persons where we do not know whereabouts. So there are always, because of the control within China, there are always a lack of information outflow.
I think it was the Tiananmen demonstrations which really woke the world up to the human rights climate in China and the subsequent crackdown. But do you think that the world now is beginning to forget what happened on Tiananmen Square?
I think especially the world leaders had now, you know, put human rights, though very bluntly sometimes, towards the Chinese leadership. But business as usual is going on, and there are not enough pressure. There are maybe lip service towards human rights in China, but I think in general, Western leaders and Western power had already put it aside as not in their priority over relationship with China.
You just mentioned business as usual with China. Is that very dangerous for human rights, because that means business goes on overlooking the problems?
Yes, I think it depends on how you conduct business. You know, if you combine business with human rights, I think that is one of the strategies to change the human rights situation in China. You may not want to block off completely China and isolate it as it is in the past. I think it would be very wise for businessmen to do business on certain conditions. Say, for example, if they conduct business in China, they should allow their factories, workers, to have more freedom of expression within the factory and also within the society. I think they should use their business muscle to ensure that there are awareness and also compliance with the human rights standards.
Sure, but if they use their business muscle to promote human rights, Beijing would not be happy with that at all and would probably tell them to leave or put restrictions on them. So they would obviously make less money in that respect, and they would not be interested in doing that.
I think if they do it rightly, you know, the Chinese government cannot refuse them, because I think Chinese government is quite want to open up to foreign investment, and I think that by raising the standards of human rights is should be part of condition of investing into China. So maybe Chinese government will say, okay, get off my soil if you raise anything about human rights. Then it is on the part of Chinese government that have made the mistake, not on the part of the businessman. But if the businessman go into China and do business as usual without regarding any of the human rights issues that have been going on, then it is the responsibility, I would say, or the mistake of the on the part of the businessman instead.
Do you know of any businesses today in China that take this philosophy?
We don't observe any much of this sort of attitude towards human rights. And I think it is time to pressurize on the business circle that they should take this up as part of the strategy towards China.
How much influence do you think Hong Kong-based organizations such as the Alliance have in influencing the human rights climate in China?
I would say that Hong Kong is sort of a window of China, and Hong Kong is a very important area whereby information can go in and go out. And I think this is also true in terms of the pro-democracy movement. We hope that the Hong Kong Alliance can serve the role of getting information in and getting information out. And I think this would help in the long run the human rights climate in China. And we also believe that by rallying the people of Hong Kong to support human rights in China, we can focus the attention of the Chinese leadership and also the world public opinion on China.
What sort of concerns does your group have for Tibet?
I think basically Tibet, of course, is there's a lot of human rights abuses, and we are concerned about the rights of the Tibetan on their human rights situation. But because that there are always we have a problem or lack of information about Tibet. So in general, the people of Hong Kong had not a very high awareness of the Tibetan situation.
It seems to me that when people look at the human rights situation in China, they tend to overlook Tibet. Why do you think that is?
I believe that is because the information is not really outgoing into the world. And also, I think it's because the other problem, I would say, overshadowed Tibet. Say, the problem with what happened to the dissidents in after Tiananmen Square, that issue itself will overshadow that of Tibet. I think basically because Hong Kong people had commit their whole emotion and commit their support to the 89 democracy movement more than commit themselves to the Tibetan human rights situation. So I would say because of that, the people of Hong Kong tend to look more into the human rights abuses within China itself, and especially what happened to those dissidents who after 1989.
How concerned would you say the people of Hong Kong are regarding the human rights situation in China today?
I think the people of Hong Kong itself had much to learn about human rights. Firstly, the human rights situation in Hong Kong is not really up to full standard. There are also abuses within Hong Kong itself. And secondly, I think the focus on China had been on what happened to the dissidents and the jailing of the political prisoner. I think there are still a lack of awareness on the part of the people of Hong Kong of human rights abuses in other areas, say in area of say freedom of expression, freedom of association, freedom of assembly, and also in area like what happened to Tibetan, there is still a lack of awareness over these issues.
As I've mentioned before, Beijing says that there are cultural differences between human rights in China and human rights in the West, and the West uses their standard to judge China's human rights record. Do you think there are cultural differences in human rights between the West and China?
Yeah, I would say there's a cultural difference in terms of awareness But human rights is an international standard, and I believe that all people all over the world, including Chinese, of course, would like to have freedom of expression, and would like to have freedom of thought, would like to be able to travel freely, to express themselves freely, to contact other in the free atmosphere. I think there are no cultural difference over this aspiration for freedom and human rights, but there are cultural difference in terms of the awareness. You know, say for example, the people of China, especially in the rural area, would be more unaware of human rights abuses. They think that all this are normal, so-called, and they think that they have to accept this, and they don't know that there should be another system whereby their human rights should be respected. I think this boils down to much of what we call sort of feudalism, you know, whereby in the past it's the emperor and the peasant, and now it's the party and the peasant. So for the rural area, I would say the lack of awareness are even more serious, and in the city it is improving, but still people would think that it is very impossible under the Communist Party system.
Now we've identified that there is a problem of cultural awareness. What do we do about it?
I think information is most important, I would say. I would say the aspiration for freedom is always there within the heart of the people. It's just that they need to be more informed about how their human rights situation can be protected, and how they should struggle for better human rights situation in China. So I think the only way to deal with in the long term manner of raising awareness is to really to help getting information into China. Of course, there are always a news blockade, but we believe that since society is opening up, lots of people travel into China, especially in the cities. We believe that by doing so, there are gradually a change awareness of the human rights in China. And I think it had already improved a lot, but it still, of course, there are still area to be dealt with.
But we wouldn't have to suffer if there were more love for your brothers. But these are trying times, trying times. But we wouldn't have to suffer
This Metro News special report, Human Rights in China, A Closer Look with Eric Olander, will return after this brief news break.